It's always been a curiosity to me, something I found wasn't really sure about, but I can remember all the way back to some of my earliest catechetical classes, sitting with my mother and the book and catechism in probably first grade or so, and just going over the basics of our faith. And the one that, I don't know, I really wrestled with when I was 6 or 7, I mean, really 5 or 6, I really wrestled with was, why are we here? And I'm sure everyone else had this figured out by then, but I, you know, this was the concept I was struggling with, was, why are we here? And of course, the book seeks to answer that almost immediately. But the book addresses it, says, you know, we're here because God loves us. And of course, I don't know, this didn't seem sufficient. I kept having to come back, but why does he love us? I mean, genuinely speaking, why? What about us is so very lovable? What about us is so remarkably easily to have love for us? It's this amazing thing. I don't know why no one, I mean, I'm sure everyone else had to figure out by then, that's why I was lingering on it, but I couldn't get out of chapter one. It frustrated my mother because I spent the better part of a month trying to get out of chapter one, and I just needed to understand this. Why are we here? I mean, I'm the fourth of 6 children. By the time I was in first grade, I had 2 brothers and 2 sisters, and I was definitely wondering some days, why am I here? You know, there's so much noise, there's so many things, it's always ongoing, and why am I here? And my mother consistently called me impatient. Sometimes. Sometimes we didn't always have all those qualities, but my mother continued to come back to, God had so much love that he wanted to share. God had the capacity for love, and he wanted to not only share that love by giving out love, but knowing that he could have the capacity to extend love to us as well. And it fascinated me. I didn't really understand necessarily why. And I pressed further, but I said, well, you know, when we first come into the world, I was worldly by then, you know, I was 6. When we first come into the world, what is there to love about us? I mean, mostly all we do is scream. I mean, we fill our own diapers with all kinds of things that nobody ever wants to see ever again. And everyone says that they've got their, you know, their limit. And trust me, the baby can always exceed that limit. So whenever you decide what that limit is, trust me, the baby will find a way to beat that. And, you know, they fill their diapers and they scream and they sleep sometimes, but they never sleep when you want them to, and they're hungry. Like every 2 hours, I mean, it's constant. You have to feed this thing and clean it. And I've never known anyone to go through more clothing changes in a day than small children, because, you know, they throw up on their clothes and they mess their clothes, and you have to bathe them and they smell. And right when they first come out, I mean, they've done all kinds of weird things. You know, they're kind of purplish and they're gross and they're disgusting. They look like aliens from another planet. And, I mean, I genuinely think about this, and I thought about it. My mother, I was like, well, why does my mother even love us? I mean, really, seriously, what have we given our mother by the time that we're born? Aside from really weird food crazings, pain, anguish, blood, sweat, tears, and then there's that labor thing that happens towards the end. You know, I mean, there's all these things that go into it, and it really becomes a question of, why do our mothers even love us? I mean, are we really that cute? I have my doubts. And then, over time, trying to go along with it, always wrestling with it, eventually I had to come back to what my mother said at the very first and second and third and for the first month, catechetical instruction. That is to say, that God had this great love for us. And in love's truest form, it is a gift. It's an outpouring. It's not an investment strategy. It's not about, if I give out this amount of love, I can get this much love in return. It's a gift of sacrifice. It's that willingness to say that I'm going to pour myself out because I love. And that the very reality of love is this willingness to empty themselves for the good of someone else. And there is a desire, it's not a criticism, but a desire, that love couldn't, in fact, at some point be returned. That they could not only experience the gift of giving love, but receiving someone else's love. But that it had to be freely given. And this is remarkable. We have incredible technology these days. We can visit, build and design all kinds of wondrous and amazing things. I can program a computer to every morning wake me up and tell me that it loves me. But it doesn't. It's just programmed to say that. I can program all kinds of incredible things, and I'm really too lazy to do it, so I can convince other people to write programs to do things for me. And the programs can do incredible things. You know, I have a device in my house that can turn on the lights and tell me that it loves me. And my computer can tell me the time of day and then remind me that I'm a good person. I can have devices that do all kinds of incredible things, but you know, that's what their programming says to do. It's not really the same thing at all. To really experience love, to know love, is to have it freely given. Is to have it freely given without coercion or programming or coding, but rather from someone who has the capacity to say no. And instead chooses to say yes. And I'm amazed by this. I am. Because today we celebrate the solemnity of the Mother of God. At one point, God, who is love, who had such a great love that he wanted to share with someone who could offer that love in return, did in fact do that. And they didn't show love in return. Instead, they pulled away from him. And they said, we don't really need you. And that had to be heart-wrenching. But he didn't give up. He wanted to continue to show that love. He continued to pour out himself and to even promise that he would send that which he loved most, his own son, his only son, his begotten one. But they had to come into the world. And God chose a woman and he asked if she would bear God himself. And if this woman would become the mother of the author of love. And it fascinates me because in so many ways to ask this woman to become a mother is to ask this woman to become this lover of this child. To live and witness the love of this child so that this child can grow up and know what it is to be loved. How weird is it? Consider for a moment how weird is it to be asked a question like, are you willing to love the author of love? It seems almost self-obvious at a certain point. It seems, well, naturally, it would seem so straightforward to want to become the mother of one who shows such incredible love. And yet, it's not going to be an easy path. We have all kinds of curiosities that happen along the way. We have everything from shepherds showing up moments after birth and trying to express and live through that harrowing experience of having all these strangers sort of wander through at moments after birth. We have strange prophecies of Simeon as they present a child 8 days old who says to the mother, you yourself, the Lord shall pierce your heart. And she must bear that and carry that and not even necessarily know what that means. It means losing your child when he's 12 years old in the city of Jerusalem and not even realizing you misplaced your child until so at least a day later. And then, of course, all those questions come up. How could you possibly lose your one son? You got one job. Come on. How did you lose that one son? And yet there they are, and they're panicked, and they're looking for him. And he's confused. Why were you looking for me? How do you not know? I was going to be right here the whole time. I mean, come on. The last place you looked. Unless you keep looking for your kid after you find him, which would be weird. But this is the same mother who would have a child who would grow up to go to the wedding feast. Who would do what his mother asked, even though his mother didn't ask him directly, but rather filled him in and made him figure out the rest of the steps along the way. And you better learn that secret language from your mother, because otherwise you're going to have a lot more frustrating conversations. But, you know, you figure out how to make these steps along the way. We expect your child to step up and be that witness. We have the same child who would ask the woman for a drink at a well because he actually was seeking her faith, because he had to become that witness to love to someone first. And he had to witness it for himself first. This same one who would sit at the table of Martha and Mary as they engaged him both in faith and in life, service and contemplation. The same one who he would feed thousands of people out of great love, who would become a witness to his apostles of who he is, who he would serve at tables, who he would know even in the Pharisee's house, and the woman who knew him out of great love. This one who would raise the dead and be humble enough to kneel down and wash the feet of his followers. All became possible because he had to witness love first. And he witnessed that love in his mother. It's a remarkable and beautiful gift to have a mother. And I know you all have mothers. I know for a fact you all have mothers because you're here. Because you're actually here. You made it. Congratulations. You have a mother who loves you. I can assure you of that. And maybe we don't always think our mothers do the best job. Maybe we find frustration in the way our mother handled certain things or exchanged in certain kinds of our relationship. And maybe we don't think that it was the ideal, perfect relationship that we always hope for a mother. But I want to assure you right now, the very fact that you are alive means that your mother loved you enough to carry you. Even if she gave you up for adoption early on, she still lovingly brought you into this world. And that love does not always have to be expressed by a smile and joy, but it can be expressed in so many tears as well. And that we are remarkably lucky enough to have mothers is actually an extension of the very first thing we learn in catechism. We are here because God loves so very much that he wanted to share his love with others. I have a challenge for you today. I know it's close to the end of the day, but you made it to the Holy Due obligation, so props to you for that. You don't have to go to confession for that. I'm sure you can find something else to go to confession for, but not this one. But in the meantime, thank your mother. Take the time before the day is out to thank your mother for being loved. I know for some of you that thanks will have to be offered in prayer form instead of by phone call or visit. But that doesn't change the fact that we still must remember that we have a mother who loves us very much. The Church in her wisdom said that doesn't even have to stop there, that we also can have a blessed mother. That we actually were all blessed to have two mothers who loved us. Maybe one of them shows it better than the other, but that doesn't matter. We have two mothers, and they both love us. Take time today to thank them. They are your first witness to love and the greatest reminder of why we're here.